Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, June 24th, 2023. Religion. The Southern Baptist Convention by Landon Coleman, pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church. The Southern Baptist Convention met in New Orleans, Louisiana earlier this month. If you've watched cable news or been on social media, you've likely heard plenty of hot takes about what happened at that meeting, and those hot takes likely centered on several votes that took place in New Orleans. The executive committee of the SBC had previously taken action to exclude two churches from affiliation in the SBC because those churches had ordained females to the office of pastor, overseer, elder. Both churches knew their action was contrary to the Baptist faith and message 2000, and rather than leave the SBC, both churches decided to stay within the SBC and appeal the decision of the executive committee. In New Orleans, the action of the SBC's executive committee in excluding these churches was upheld by the messengers by a resounding majority. Additionally, the messengers voted to move forward with an amendment that would clarify the SBC's position on the ordination of pastors, overseers, elders, limiting this office of pastor to qualified men. Some within the SBC have raised questions about how these votes relate to the autonomy of the Southern Baptist churches. The short answer is these votes have absolutely nothing to do with the autonomy of any local church. Individual Baptist churches have every right to ordain anyone as a pastor. That's autonomy. The SBC is not telling any church what to do or not do. Rather, the SBC is rightly defining the parameters of affiliation within a voluntary association of churches, something it certainly has the right to do. Some have questioned whether or not Southern Baptists are becoming too creedal in clarifying how the Baptist faith and message defines affiliation with the SBC. I would simply note that Baptists have a long, rich history of writing confessions of faith and statements of faith. These documents do not carry the authority of the Bible, but they do clarify what a voluntary association of churches believes about the Bible. In doing so, they define the parameters of cooperation, something the SBC has done from its inception. Some have questions about where these votes leave Southern Baptist churches that do not have females in the position of senior pastor, but that do have females who have been given the title of pastor as staff members, i.e. children's pastor. Some have suggested that these votes will begin an inquisition to remove these churches, but that need not be the case. Instead of launching an inquisition, the SBC is encouraging its churches to give consideration to the clear teaching of the New Testament and the polity of their local church. Some have suggested that women are being banned from leadership and involvement in the SBC. Nothing could be further from the truth, and this is not an accurate description of the votes that took place in New Orleans this week. There was no vote to ban women from leadership, nor was there a vote to prohibit women from serving in ministry on the staff of a Baptist church. The votes this week were specifically focused on the office of pastor and who ought to be recognized with that title. In these votes, the messengers of the SBC affirmed their commitment to complementarianism over egalitarianism. And in doing so, the SBC affirmed its commitment to the inerrancy and authority of Scripture. To be sure, nothing changed in Southern Baptist life with these votes, but the convictions of Southern Baptists were clarified in helpful ways. Clearly, the majority of Southern Baptists believe the question about who can rightly be recognized as a pastor is a biblical question rather than a cultural question. Furthermore, in these votes, Southern Baptists showed that celebrity, size, and influence will not overrule our convictions. Living on purpose. Being Transformed by the Renewing of Our Mind, by Dr. William F. Holland, Jr. When we think about the challenges and possibilities of our future, it's easy to ignore our responsibilities while we imagine someone else stepping into our situation and helping us achieve our goals, hoping that another person will provide what we need or figure out the solutions to our problems is not a substitute for perseverance. It's true, there are times when the generosity of others makes a huge difference, but God has given us a sound mind and unlimited potential to be successful if we can only learn how to develop faith in His plans for us. Along with His resources, a critical spiritual principle is to pray and wait until we know we have heard His voice. However, I have also learned there is an important balance where often the Lord is actually waiting on us to believe and take the initiative to press forward. When we place our trust in Him and allow Him to change our attitudes into a positive force, that which seems unattainable moves into the area of possibility. Romans 12:2 reveals that we have a responsibility to be transformed by the renewing of our mind in order that we may prove and demonstrate God's perfect will. We must allow the Lord to change our minds from fear and doubt, as learning to believe and trust our Heavenly Father is a foundational pillar of the meaning of life. If we focus on being the best we can be for His glory, we will live in joy. But if we doubt and expect the worst, we release the powers of negativity that can stifle our hope. In every situation, we can either respond with a positive confidence or a negative skepticism, and these choices determine whether we live in spiritual peace or emotional misery. I recently read a true story that was told by Hugh Fullerton, a famous sports writer, many years ago. His account involved a man named Josh O'Reilly, who managed the San Antonio baseball team that was part of the Texas League. O'Reilly had an impressive roster of all-star players, including seven whose batting average was over 300. Everyone thought this super team would easily win the championship, but mysteriously, they began the season losing 17 of their first 20 games. The players could not hit the ball, and as time went by, frustration boiled over into angry accusations against each other. Just when it seemed the situation could not be worse, a weak team humiliated them as they managed only one hit the entire game. In the clubhouse after the embarrassment, the players were confused and depressed. O'Reilly knew he had the most talented team in the league, but also realized the trouble was in their minds. These men were not expecting to get a hit or anticipating a victory because they were thinking wrong. They had slowly allowed doubt and uncertainty to fill their conscience with discouragement and defeat. We are what we think, and when our mental focus is controlled by negativity, it prevents confidence. And in this situation, it was causing a disruption with their timing, strength, and coordination. And yet, they were the only ones who could change the situation. A certain minister named Reverend Schlater was holding special services in the area, and he was drawing large crowds as his messages were filled with inspiration and encouragement. O'Reilly asked each player to lend him their favorite bat, which he loaded into a wheelbarrow and told the players to stay in the clubhouse as he had something very important to show them. Soon he returned overflowing with excitement as he told the players this minister had anointed, prayed, and blessed the bats, and they now contained a spiritual power that could not be stopped. The players were astounded and jumping with enthusiasm. The next day, they confidently overwhelmed the best team in the league with 37 hits and 20 runs scored. They continued their way through the league schedule and convincingly won the championship. Regardless of what we believe about praying over a baseball bat or positive decrees, we can agree that something very powerful happened within the minds and attitudes of the players. The sports equipment did not change, but with a new way of thinking, the creative power of faith blossomed. Mark 9:23 declares this spiritual reality is available to all who place their trust in God's divine truth instead of pessimism and despair. Dr. Holland is an ordained minister, author, and community chaplain. Read more about the Christian life at billyhollandministries.com. Good Samaritan's heart was what counted. The Reverends Bristow and Hill say the parable remains relevant by Bob Campbell. The parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10:25-37 is one in which the Reverends William Mark Bristow and Andy Hill see timeless relevance. Jesus told the story, they say, to show what a neighbor truly was. The Reverend Bristow, pastor of Parker Heights Christian Church here and Grace Fellowship in Monahans, said the man was probably robbed, beaten, and left for dead on a road about 10 miles south of Jerusalem, where criminals made travel dangerous for people who didn't move in groups. All the religious people are passing him by when a Samaritan comes along and rescues him, watches over him, puts him in an inn, pays the innkeeper, and says he will return and pay any more of his bills, Bristow said. The famous Prime Minister of India, Mahatma Gandhi, said he would love to be a Christian if it weren't for the Christians with the way we act. We should be more like the Good Samaritan and ask God to help us rescue and heal those who are having troubled times. Bristow said giving help when it is most needed is often not easy. I've had times when I went to the side because it looked like trouble, and then God touched my heart and said, "You should go back and help that person," he said. Sometimes it's messy when people need help, but that's okay. The countryside where it happened looks like Van Horn. Jesus told this story as a shining example. The Reverend Hill, pastor of West Texas Cowboy Church, said the story is also remarkable because there was great enmity between the Jews and Samaritans. At that time, the Jews considered the Samaritans to be almost untouchable because they were people of mixed heritage and mixed blood, he said. They would go miles out of their way to avoid passing through Samaria. Jesus didn't tell the story to shame the Jewish leaders, but to show that God looks at the heart rather than the pedigree. Citing 1 Samuel 16:6-13, Hill said, David was the runt of the litter and the least likely to be selected as the next king of Israel based on his outward appearance, but like the Good Samaritan, his heart was right toward his fellow man. Hill said the Pharisees were moving to the other side of the road, yet it was the Samaritan, the lowliest of all people, who not only stopped to help, but also gave money and made sure the man was taken care of. My takeaway is that we should make sure our hearts are right with God and toward our fellow man with compassion, mercy, and forgiveness, not just read God's word, but put it into action, he said. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 24th, 2023. Dear Abby, is it a problem that my doctor is a bit of a flirt? I had a procedure recently, and when it was completed, the doctor announced, "All set." My reflexive response of gratitude, relief, and optimism that the procedure would help me was beautiful. Doctor's response to that was, "Just like you." Now, that could mean just like you to respond that way, or it could mean you are beautiful. I don't mind either way, but is this a problem that should be noted somewhere? It's not the first flirty type double entendre. Don't mind, but others might. Dear Don't Mind, if the compliment was followed by anything else that made you uncomfortable, you should have spoken up and told him so. He may have meant that you are a beautiful person rather than any physical attribute. Or he may say something similar to ingratiate himself to all his female patients. Bottom line, if you feel you must be on guard with your doctor, pay attention to your intuition and find another one. Dear Abby, I have 3 grown children living in my house, my son 27 and my daughters aged 27 and 23. All 3 have boyfriends and girlfriends who occasionally sleep over. My son's girlfriend sleeps in his room, while my daughter's boyfriends sleep on the couch. The girls are now asking for their boyfriends to sleep in their bedrooms. I know they are not babies, but I'm not comfortable with it. What's your thought? Uncomfortable Dad in New York. Dear Dad, as you stated, your children are all adults. I find it interesting that you have allowed your son to do this while denying it to your daughters. If ever there was an example of the double standard, this is it. Of course, the bottom line is that this is your house and you get to set the rules. Before you do that, look into your heart, figure out what is making you uncomfortable, and have a frank discussion about your feelings with all your children. Dear Abby, I have been seeing a widower for 2 years. His wife died 2.5 years ago. His children don't care for me, not because of me personally, but because someone is now in their father's life other than their mother. The kids are going to have a combination birthday party and anniversary party for their father. If his wife hadn't died, this would have been their 50th anniversary. Is this normal? It seems awkward to me. Are they doing it because I'm going to be there? What should I do? Uneasy replacement in Michigan. Dear replacement, what the kids are doing is bittersweet, and I understand the impulse. I surmise that their father will experience mixed emotions about it. This isn't necessarily being done because you are in the picture. It may be an attempt to keep their late mother's memory alive without taking your feelings into account. Attend the party, be gracious and warm to everyone, and do not personalize it. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 24th, 2023. Section D. Community. Legacy student to join International Space Program. Rising Legacy High School senior Brianna Ortiz is one of five students in the U.S. and the only Texan to be selected to attend the International Science School, ISS, this summer in Australia. This prestigious program, designed to ignite young minds and foster a passion for space exploration, provides students with an immersive and educational experience that promises to shape their future in the field of space sciences. Brianna's space journey started when she participated in MISD's Higher Orbits program in fall 2021. That experience gave her the opportunity to apply for ISS through an extensive application process that included letters of recommendation, writing essays, and an interview. ISS selected Brianna from a highly competitive pool of international applicants who share an enthusiasm for space exploration. During the program, Brianna will have the privilege of engaging with top-notch scientists, engineers, and educators who will guide her through an array of hands-on activities, simulations, and lectures. This comprehensive training will provide her with invaluable knowledge about space travel, rocketry, robotics, and other essential aspects of the aerospace industry. This is a dream come true for me, and I can't wait to immerse myself in the world of space exploration, Brianna said. When I was little, I wanted to be an astronaut, but now I'm interested in becoming an aerospace engineer and building rockets that impact the way we live here on Earth. Brianna said one of the things she's most looking forward to is the opportunity to collaborate with fellow like-minded students from around the world. They will participate in team-building exercises, problem-solving challenges, and space mission simulations, fostering essential skills such as leadership, critical thinking, and effective communication. The experience gained at ISS will broaden Brianna's horizons and inspire her to pursue a career in the exciting field of space exploration. She leaves for her 3-week adventure in Australia, June 26th. Diamondback Energy partners on STEM Camp. Diamondback Energy, in partnership with Opportunity Tribe and Venture Robotics, has taken a step forward, fostering innovation and nurturing young minds. Diamondback Energy, in partnership with Opportunity Tribe and Venture Robotics, has taken a significant step toward fostering innovation and nurturing young minds by organizing the highly anticipated Diamondback STEM Camp 2023. Running for 3 weeks this month, the camp has provided students with an immersive and dynamic learning experience, exploring the realms of robotics, circuitry, and drone flight. The engaging activities has encouraged participants to think critically, solve problems, collaborate with their peers, fostering a spirit of innovation, bravery, and teamwork. This, of course, could not be done without relationship building between employee volunteers and our students as a top priority. The seamless integration of Diamondback Energy, Opportunity Tribe, and Venture Robotics has been the driving force behind the camp's success. Through their joint efforts, the organizers have seamlessly merged their expertise, resources, and mentorship to create a holistic learning environment. Diamondback Energy, known for its commitment to community engagement, has played a pivotal role in ensuring the camp's success through a team of dedicated volunteers who have generously shared their knowledge and expertise. These Diamondback volunteers have become mentors and role models for the students, inspiring them to be leaders and potentially pursue careers in STEM fields. The power of STEM education and community partnerships is transformative, says Kees Vanthoff, President and Chief Financial Officer of Diamondback Energy. Through initiatives like the Diamondback STEM Camp, we are not only equipping young minds with essential skills, but also inspiring them to become the next generation of innovators and problem solvers. It is through collaboration and shared resources that we can create a lasting impact in our community. Opportunity Tribe, a nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering underserved communities, has been instrumental in identifying young individuals and helping them to gain access to this transformative educational experience. By partnering with Diamondback Energy, they have created an opportunity for students who may not have had such exposure otherwise. Ben Wall, Executive Director of Opportunity Tribe, states, "Our friends at Diamondback Energy are awesome. This is the third year in a row that they have hosted a STEM camp for our junior high leaders. Their team of mentors have shown up, brought energy, fun, and great passion for learning." Venture Robotics, renowned for their work in bringing robotics to youth, has shared their technical expertise with the camp participants. Venture Robotics strives to teach technology that has a purpose. It was great to team up with other partners such as Diamondback and Opportunity Tribe because those groups also strive for great purpose and meaning, said Dan Schantz, Vice President and co-founder of Venture Robotics. "Our youth are facing new technology challenges every day. It is important to help guide them through these STEM-related efforts, but also how to build relationships with others at the same time." The positive impact of the Diamondback STEM Camp 2023 is evident through the enthusiasm and growth displayed by the students. The camp has not only provided them with valuable technical skills, but has also encouraged critical thinking, problem solving, and teamwork, essential qualities for success in the modern world. MC alum leads Midland Memorial Hospital Cardiopulmonary and Neurology Department, by Rebecca Bell of Midland College. "Respiratory therapists are the cool kids in a hospital," Troy Ward said. "We do everything, go everywhere, and see every type of patient, from those who are just a few minutes old to those who are at end of life. I've been a respiratory therapist for almost 30 years, and I love my job." Ward graduated from Permian High School in Odessa in 1990 and then worked in the oil field for 3 years, before deciding on a career in healthcare. In 1992, while completing an associate degree in respiratory care, he worked as a student intern at Odessa Regional Medical Center and then worked there full-time after becoming a board-certified respiratory therapist. Today, Ward is director of the Cardiopulmonary and Neurology Department at Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH. During his career, besides working in hospital settings, he has held numerous respiratory therapist jobs that include working for several home health care agencies and a rehabilitation center. "Each job offered me great experience," Ward explained. "When I was working at HealthSouth, now and Compass Health Rehabilitation Hospital, I manage the respiratory therapy department and the lab. Many people don't realize that respiratory therapists are also licensed to draw blood, so managing the lab was a good fit. When I worked in home health care, I was the branch manager, which meant that not only was I the respiratory therapist, I was also a driver, and I was responsible for marketing. I worked there for a year, taking 1 week off when my son was born. Ward said that accepting the job as a staff respiratory therapist at MMH was the best career move he made. "There's not a better hospital for which to work," he said. "Employees are allowed to think freely outside the box. When someone on my team comes up with a new idea to help a patient, I say, let's try it. My motto is, proceed until apprehended." In November 2003, MMH promoted Ward to a director-level position, and he found that he enjoyed having management responsibilities. To further advance his career, in 2011, he graduated with a bachelor's degree in Midland College's Organizational Management Program. And in 2017, he received a Master of Science degree in Healthcare Administration from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. His capstone project was published in the American Society of Business and Behavioral Sciences, ASBBS, in 2018 and won the Best Paper of a Track from the ASBBS that same year. Ward currently supervises approximately 60 respiratory care employees and oversees five departments: respiratory therapy, neonatal intensive care unit, NICU, respiratory therapy, vascular access, sleep lab, and diagnostics. In addition to regular respiratory responsibilities, the respiratory therapy team at MMH is responsible for conducting electroencephalograms, neurological diagnostics, and to his knowledge is the only respiratory therapy department in Texas that performs central line placements. Of course, a hospital never closes, so there is always a respiratory therapy group at MMH, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, Ward said. As long as there are people who breathe, we will be there. In addition to his responsibilities at MMH, Ward is also president of the Midland College Alumni Association. He has two grown sons, ages 20 and 24. In his spare time, he enjoys spending time with them and his girlfriend, Stephanie. Ward is also an avid golfer. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. Donors choose. Bowie teacher looks to build class library by Ben Schaefer. Bustin' for Badges raises record $540,000 for law enforcement. Fundraiser benefiting police and sheriff's agencies has raised more than $4 million since 2014. The 10th anniversary Bustin' for Badges Sporting Clays Tournament hauled in a record-breaking $540,000 last month to benefit four Permian area law enforcement agencies, according to preliminary estimates. The three-day contest at Windwalker Farms Sporting Clays in Stanton also boasted a record number of shooters among the 2,000 attendees and volunteers who turned out for the event that's quickly become one of the largest law enforcement fundraisers in the country. With the tally from the May tournament, The competition has raised more than $4 million since 2014 to directly benefit the Midland and Ector County Sheriff's Offices and Midland and Odessa Police Departments. This year, each agency will receive about $135,000. The funds have allowed the agencies to purchase vital life-saving equipment and technology and make budget ends meet, especially in unpredictable economic times. Given the current environment, it is unfortunate that many law enforcement agencies are finding themselves in a tight spot, having to trim budgets just to maintain daily operations, said Pioneer Natural Resources President and Chief Operating Officer Rich Dealey, who was recently appointed as the company's next CEO and will take over leadership duties in 2024. That's why fundraisers like Bustin' for Badges are so important. They provide a critical lifeline to the men and women who have sworn to serve and protect the people and places that we call home. Pioneer was the anniversary shoot's $75,000 presenting sponsor and has been a longtime supporter of Bustin' for Badges. Since its founding a decade ago by a group of seven dedicated board members, the contest has quickly grown from a local gathering attracting a few hundred shooters into the Permian's premier fundraising centerpiece, fielding 420 teams last month. Additionally, more than 200 Permian-focused companies supported this year's contest. I'm proud of the record attendance and funds raised this year for our local deputies and officers, Dealey said. Since the beginning of the year, our employees volunteered their own free time to help ensure this year's 10th anniversary tournament was such a success, so a special thanks to all the volunteers for their time and effort. It can't be said enough that the energy industry couldn't accomplish what it does without our dedicated community of law enforcement professionals, Dealey said. Bustin' for Badges is a 501c3 nonprofit organization focused on fundraising efforts in support of local law enforcement agencies. All proceeds directly benefit Midland Police Department, Odessa Police Department, Midland County Sheriff's Office, and Ector County Sheriff's Office. For more information, visit bustinforbadges.org.
Closing arguments set in trial of Florida deputy accused of failing to stop Parkland school shooter. Terry Spencer, Associated Press, June 26, 2023. Updated June 26, 2023, 9:24 a.m. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, AP. Closing arguments are scheduled Monday in the trial of former Florida sheriff's deputy accused of failing to confront the shooter who murdered 14 students and three staff members at Parkland High School 5 years ago. Prosecutors and the attorney for Broward County Deputy Scott Peterson spent his trial contesting what he heard, saw, and knew during the six-minute attack inside a three-story classroom building at Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School on February 14, 2018. Peterson, 60, is charged with felony child neglect and other charges for his alleged failure to confront former students Nicholas Cruz before the gunman reached the 1200 building's third floor, where six of the victims died. Peterson is not charged in connection with the deaths of 11 people killed on the first floor before he reached the building. It is the first time a U.S. law enforcement officer has been tried in connection with a school shooting. Prosecutors, during their two-week presentation, called to the witness stand students, teachers, and law enforcement officers who testified about the horror they experienced and how they knew where Cruz was. Some said they knew for certain that the shots were coming from the 1200 building. Prosecutors also called the training supervisor who testified Peterson did not follow protocols for confronting an active shooter. Peterson attorney Mark Eiglerich, during his two-day presentation, called several deputies who arrived during the shooting and students and teachers who testified that they did not think the shots were coming from the 1200 building. Peterson, who did not testify, has said that because of echoes, he could not pinpoint the shooter's location. Iglarsh has also emphasized the failure of the sheriff's radio system during the attack, which limited what Peterson was hearing from arriving deputies. The jury will also have to decide whether Peterson was a caregiver to the juvenile students who died and were wounded on the third floor, a legal requirement for him to be convicted of child neglect. Florida law defines a caregiver as a parent, adult household member, or other person responsible for a child's welfare. Caregivers are guilty of felony neglect if they fail to make a reasonable effort to protect children or don't provide necessary care. Security videos show that 36 seconds after Cruz's attack began, Peterson exited his office about 100 yards, 92 meters, from the 1200 building and jumped into a cart with two unarmed civilian security guards. They arrived at the building a minute later. Peterson got out of the cart near the east doorway to the first floor hallway. Cruz was at the hallway's opposite end, firing his AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle. Peterson, who was not wearing a bullet-resistant vest, didn't open the door. Instead, he took cover 75 feet, 23 meters, away in the alcove of a neighboring building, his gun still drawn. He stayed there for 40 minutes, long after the shooting ended, and other police officers had stormed the building. Peterson faces up to nearly 100 years in prison if convicted, although because of his clean record, a sentence anywhere near that length is highly unlikely. He could also lose his $104,000 annual pension. He had spent nearly three decades working at schools, including 9 years at Stoneham Douglas. He retired shortly after the shooting and was then fired retroactively. Cruz's jury could not unanimously agree he deserved the death penalty. The 24-year-old former Stoneham Douglas student was sentenced to life in prison. The suspect in the attack that killed five at Colorado Springs Gay Nightclub is set to plead guilty. Colleen Slevin, Associated Press, June 25, 2023. Updated June 26, 2023, 2 a.m. Pictured, Noah Reich, left, and David Maldonado, the Los Angeles co-founders of Classroom of Compassion, set up a memorial near Club Q in Colorado Springs, Colorado, on November 22, 2022, with photographs of the five victims of a mass shooting at the gay nightclub. Credit David Zalubowski, AP. Colorado Springs, Colorado, AP. The suspect in a mass shooting at Colorado Springs Gay Nightclub is expected to plead guilty Monday in an attack last year that killed five people and wounded 17 at a longtime sanctuary for the LGBTQ plus community in a mostly conservative city. The plea could bring a life sentence for suspect Anderson Lee Aldrich and end the court case just 7 months after the shooting, sparing victims' families and survivors a potentially painful trial that would force them to revisit the attack. Victims' family members and survivors are expected to speak at Monday's hearing about how their lives were forever altered by the terror that erupted just before midnight on November 19th when the suspect walked into Club Q and indiscriminately fired an AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle. Aldrich, who is non-binary and uses they-them pronouns, had been arrested over a year before the attack for threatening their grandparents and vowing to become the next mass killer. But charges in that case were ultimately dropped. Monday's hearing follows a series of jailhouse phone calls from Aldrich to the Associated Press expressing remorse and the intention to face the consequences at this court hearing. Several survivors told the AP about a planned plea agreement after being approached about Aldrich's comments. They said that prosecutors had notified them that Aldrich will plead guilty to charges that would ensure a sentence of life behind bars. Federal and state authorities and defense attorneys have declined to comment on the possible plea agreement for Aldrich, but Colorado law requires victims to be notified of such developments. Aldrich faces more than 300 state counts, including murder and hate crimes. The U.S. Justice Department is considering pursuing federal hate crime charges, according to a senior law enforcement official familiar with the matter who spoke to AP on condition of anonymity to discuss the ongoing case. Aldrich hinted at plans to carry out violent acts at least a year before the Club Q assault. In June 2021, Aldrich's grandparents told authorities that they were warned not to stand in the way of a plan to stockpile guns, ammo, body armor, and a homemade bomb to become the next mass killer. Aldrich was then arrested after a standoff with SWAT officers that was live-streamed on Facebook and the evacuation of 10 nearby homes, telling officers, "If they breach, I'm a effing blow it to holy hell." Aldrich eventually surrendered. However, the charges against Aldrich were thrown out in July 2022 after Aldrich's mother and grandparents, the victims in the case, refused to cooperate with prosecutors, evading efforts to serve them with subpoenas to testify, according to court documents unsealed after the shooting. Other relatives told a judge they feared Aldrich would hurt their grandparents if released, painting a picture of an isolated, violent person who did not have a job and was given $30,000 that was spent largely on the purchase of 3D printers to make guns, the record showed. Aldrich was released from jail then, and authorities kept two guns, a ghost gun pistol and an MM15 rifle, seized in the arrest. But there was nothing to stop Aldrich from legally purchasing more firearms, raising questions immediately after the shooting about whether authorities should have sought a red flag order to prevent such purchases. The El Paso County Sheriff's Office said it would not have been able to seek a court order stopping Aldrich from buying or possessing guns because the 2021 arrest record was sealed after the charges were dropped. There was no new evidence that they could use to prove that Aldrich posed a threat in the near future, the Sheriff's Office said. Investigators later revealed that the two guns Aldrich had during the Club Q attack, the rifle and the handgun, appeared to be ghost guns, or firearms without serial numbers that are homemade and do not require an owner to pass a background check. Aldrich told AP in one of the interviews from jail that they were on a very large plethora of drugs and abusing steroids at the time of the attack, but they did not answer directly regarding the hate crime charges. When asked whether the attack was motivated by hate, Aldrich said only that was completely off base. Aldrich's attorneys, who have not disputed Aldrich's role in the shooting, have also pushed back on hate being the reason. Some survivors who listened to the recorded phone calls saw Aldrich's comments as an attempt to avoid the death penalty, which still exists in the federal system. Colorado abolished it in 2020, and life without prison is the mandated sentence for first-degree murder in the state. They objected to Aldrich's unwillingness to discuss a motive and their use of passive, general language like, "I just can't believe what happened," and "I wish I could turn back time." Hello, my name is Shannon Ireland, and I'll be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram. Today's date is June 26, 2023. BET Awards show honors Busta Rhymes, hip-hop's 50 years, and pays tribute to Takeoff and Tina Turner. Maria Sherman, AP music writer, June 24, 2023. Updated June 26, 2023, 2:24 a.m. Pictured, Offset, Left, and Quavo of Migos perform at the BET Awards on Sunday, June 25, 2023, at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. Credit, Mark Terrell, Envision AP. Los Angeles AP, the 2023 BET Awards celebrated 50 years of hip-hop with tributes to the genre's earliest voices, late legends, and new talent during a show packed with spectacular performances that consistently felt like a party. Sunday's biggest surprise came when Quavo and Offset, the surviving members of Migos, performed Bad and Bougie in front of an image of Takeoff, who died in a shooting last December. BET Do It for Take, the duo shouted near the beginning of their set, as their backdrop switched from the image of a space shuttle to one of Takeoff pointing in the air. Throughout the show, whether it was Tupac, Notorious B.I.G., Biz Markie, or Pop Smoke, performers and MC Kid Capri paid homage to late hip-hop stars, often by quickly highlighting a taste of their best-known hits. In a show where few awards were given, Capri and BET kept the emphasis on the music. Busta Rhymes took home the night's biggest honor, the Lifetime Achievement Award, handed to him by Swiss Beatz. The 12-time Grammy Award-nominated rapper, producer, and pioneering hip-hop figure is widely regarded as one of the great MCs, with 7 top 10 Billboard Hot 100 hits to his name. Diddy, Janet Jackson, Chuck D, Missy Elliott, Pharrell Williams, and Mariah Carey recorded a video tribute to Rhymes. "All right, I'ma wear it on my sleeve. I do want to cry," Rhymes started his speech, as his eyes started to water. He talked about his 6 children, being kicked out from his hip-hop group Leaders of the New School, and learning how to rebuild by going into studios, sharing a cigar with whoever was in the studio, and quickly whipping up a 16-bar verse. "By default, I pioneered the feature," he said. "A lot of greatness from out people in our culture is by default, because it's just a magic we have." An energetic tribute to Rhymes followed. The MC teamed up with Spliffstar for Anti Up Remix, Scenario, Look at Me Now, I Know What You Want, before a long list of A-listers jumped in. Scarlett with This Is New York, Coi Leray with Players, BIA with beach ball among them. Halfway through the performance, Rhyme shifted gears to celebrate dancehall alongside Dexta Daps, Shabba Matapot, Spice, So Me Like It, Skillbang, Wap Wap, and Cuddy Ranks, Ahu Semidun, Wait Demand. Throughout the show, old-school hip-hop heroes and modern stars mixed it up on stage, performing tracks celebrating rap's most influential cities and innovation. For Miami, Trick Daddy and Trina rocked through Nan, and Uncle Luke took on I Wanna Rock Doo Doo Brown for Atlanta. Jeezy ripped through They Know, T.I. hit 24s, and Master P did No Limit Soldiers, into Make 'em Say And for hip-hop's reggae influence, Jamaica's Doug E. Fresh and Lil Vicious did an a cappella version of Freaks, Mad Lion performed Take It Easy, and Patra nailed Romantic Call. Capri spun some of Tupac's Hail Mary to tease a crash course on West Coast rap. Warren G's Regulate, Yo-Yo's You Can't Play With My Yo-Yo, Tyga's Rack City, and E-40's Tell Me When To Go. An ode to trap started with Capri spinning the late Pop Smoke's Dior, before Chief Keef nailed Finito. And Ying Yang Twins did Wait, the Whisper Song. Audience members danced, sang along, and a few hopped up on stage, while Capri and MC Lyte keep the hostless show moving. It was a mostly hiccup-free show, save for the hitch during Patti LaBelle's performance and the show running nearly 4 hours, particularly noteworthy for an event scheduled in the midst of the ongoing Hollywood writers' strike. LaBelle honored the Tina Turner with a performance of the late singer's hit, The Best, telling the audience at one point she couldn't see the words. "I'm trying, y'all," she said before powering into the chorus. A masked Little Uzi Vert opened the show at Los Angeles' Microsoft Theater before it jumped into a quick history lesson. Capri walked the audience through a medley of the earliest days of New York City's 80s rap culture, featuring the Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, MC Lyte's Cha-Cha-Cha, D-Nice's Call Me D-Nice, and Big Daddy Kane's Raw, into a partial cover of Just a Friend, an homage to the late Biz Markie. "I would not be in this business on the stage tonight if it wasn't for one person," Big Daddy Kane said, introducing the song, Rest in Peace. He invited audience members to sing along to the song's infectious chorus. The coveted Best New Artist Award went to Coco Jones in a category which featured only female performers. "For all of my black girls, we do have to fight a little harder to get what we deserve," she said in her acceptance speech. "But don't stop fighting even when it doesn't make sense. And you're not sure how you're going to get out of those circumstances. Keep pushing because we are deserving of great things." It was followed by a supermarket-themed performance of AP's pick for Club Song of the Summer, Lotto's Put It on the Floor Again. Sans featured artist Cardi B, but no less catchy. It ended with a text tribute, "R.I.P. Shorty Low," a screen read. Tayana Spike Tay Taylor won Video Director of the Year, which was accepted by her mom, Nikki Taylor. Like a true matriarch, she interrupted the show to video call her daughter and let her have the moment. At the end of his acceptance speech, Rhymes urged the hip-hop community to stop this narrative that we don't love each other, urging veteran musicians and newcomers alike to embrace one another. It was the perfect mirror for the night. New York rapper Ice Spice ran through abridged versions of Munch, Feelin' You, Princess Diana, and In Ha Mood. Gorilla brought Liquor Some to the BET stage, and Cali powered through her TikTok hit Area Codes. In the audience, generations of hip-hop heavy hitters cheered. U.S. aircraft carrier makes Da Nang port call as America looks to strengthen ties with Vietnam. David Rising, Associated Press, June 26, 2023. Bangkok AP, a U.S. aircraft carrier and two guided missile cruisers were visiting Vietnam on Monday, a rare port call that comes as the United States and China increasingly vie for influence in Southeast Asia. The USS Ronald Reagan, along with the guided missile cruisers USS Antietam and USS Robert Smalls, arrived in Da Nang on Sunday for the visit. Neighboring China is Vietnam's largest trading partner, but Beijing's sweeping maritime claims in the South China Sea have led to increasing friction with Vietnam, as well as with Malaysia, Brunei, Indonesia, and the Philippines. The U.S., meantime, has been on a diplomatic push to strengthen economic and military ties in the Indo-Pacific region. The aircraft carrier's port call, only the third such visit since relations were reestablished after the end of the Vietnam War, follows visits to Vietnam this year from U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai, and USAID Administrator Samantha Power. Though aircraft carrier visits often spark media attention because of their highly visible nature, the broader question is how will this play into the development of ties, including Washington's quest to upgrade relations? Prashanth Paramaswaran, a fellow with the Wilson Center Asia Program, wrote in a research note, "An overly narrow focus on carrier visits can distract from the broader trend of the more comprehensive development of U.S.-Vietnam defense ties and relations more generally," Paramaswaran added. Officers from the Ronald Reagan debarked Sunday and were greeted by Vietnamese officers after mooring in Da Nang, a port that was modernized and expanded by the United States during the war for its own use. Captain Daryl Cardone, the Ronald Reagan's commanding officer, said some of the more than 5,000 sailors from the ship will volunteer at several community relation events, play sports with local athletes, and take part in other cultural and professional exchanges during the visit through June 30th. A few Reagan sailors call Vietnam home, but for most, it will be their first time visiting, Cardone said in a release from the U.S. Navy. Washington sees Hanoi as a key part of its strategy for the region and has sought to leverage Vietnam's traditional rivalry with its much larger neighbor, China, to expand U.S. influence in the region. Japan, a strong U.S. ally, also made a port call in Vietnam last week with its largest destroyer, Izumo, following exercises in South China Sea with Reagan and other American ships. China has also been reaching out in an effort to mend fences, sending a Navy training ship to make its own port call in Da Nang a month ago as part of what it called a goodwill tour that also took it to Thailand, Brunei, and the Philippines. Vietnam's foreign ministry called the Reagan's port call part of a normally friendly exchange for the sake of peace, stability, cooperation, and development in both the region and the world. Vietnam needs to balance its sensitive ties with Beijing, with the U.S. outreach and domestic opinion, Paramaswaran said, noting that polls suggest Vietnam's people have among the highest levels of pro-U.S. sentiment in Southeast Asia. Based in Yokosuka, Japan, the USS Ronald Reagan is the only forward-deployed American aircraft carrier. It is due to be replaced in that role next year by the USS George Washington, also a Nimitz-class carrier.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.